This week on The Droids, episode 200 of The Droids Pod. Andor may be spectacular, but what you're really here for is us reminiscing about 200 episodes of this incredible podcast that was once denied a spot at Star Wars Celebration. All that and more on The Droids.
These are the droids you're looking for. You got them. These are the droids.
There's
always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, Ryan, Sam, I am Mike. All droids are here to celebrate 200.
Wow.
Is this our bicentennial episode?
This is our bicentennial. Yeah.
200 episodes. As we look back on this, wow, what a run it's been. I think, what was it, March of 2017 is when we began this podcast. Chris, yeah. The world looked very different at that time.
There were only
two of us, and here we are with, we've doubled somehow. We're still here with a couple other, hanger-ons.
Two droids with a dream.
How many episodes were there with just the two of you? Was it like four?
I think it was one, Ryan.
I think it might have just been one.
I think
one
I guessed
two.
It on episode three.
Yeah.
I didn't go along.
Mike and
I'm getting into this.
And then you mixed up Luke's
hands, and we were like,
I was thinking about that today.
If you listen to episode two, about 35 minutes in, Mike and I just stopped talking to each other because we ran out of things to say to each other. So then we were like, we better get it.
Star Wars has been completed. We've said everything there is to exactly. be said in two episodes.
So we should say to the crowd, we appreciate how quiet you're being for the audio. We asked them to just keep the applause to a minimum. Well, Thank you all so much for being here. We're thrilled to be here at the Hollywood Bowl. And please just keep it down, and then we'll clap at the end like graduation.
Stay on program. And we're not going to have to activate the floor again.
We also know that if they get too loud, they'll kick us out of here because we're not really supposed to be in here. So,
how nice if it was Adam Driver, by the way, to introduce us like that.
That was, I mean.
We didn't hit record before that.
You're
going to
see a podcast.
I wish we had.
Well, to set things up, we are talking here about episode 9. Nobody's listening to Andor. That's going to be our 200th episode. We also will have episode 10. And why is the name escaping me of episode 10? I feel like I should have that at the top of my mind.
One Way Out.
One Way Out. Of course, that's what it should be. Episode 10, we'll talk about very quickly. So both of those episodes are going to be available for you at the time of you listening to this. Okay. So we got a little bit behind just due to normal schedules where we couldn't get episode 9 out there. So here we are with episode 9 and 10, but you're listening to episode 9. And of course, before we talk about... No, sorry, Mike.
Nobody is listening.
Nobody's listening to episode 9. You're right.
Nobody's listening. No one
it's
is
episode
listening.
Episode 9.
I've gone cross-eyed at this point. I don't know what we're talking about or who we are.
And you know what, Mike? I think it's worth mentioning that going forward, we will release two or three episodes at a time every week for perpetuity. Yes. So just
because we can handle
it,
that
folks.
Kind of content yeah. production. We,
You're
we definitely
get
have that
three
schedule.
3 to 6 hours of us every week in perpetuity until we get to
1 hour,
1 million.
1 hour per 1 minute of screen time of Andor. That's
exactly.
what I think we're doing.
Exactly. We'll do the math.
Well, we're going to talk for a moment about 200 episodes, and we'll talk about episode 9. Nobody's listening, but nobody's listening. I hope someone's listening to this podcast. Plenty of jokes have been made about that when we refer to this episode, of course.
Wow. Yeah.
But we do want to put in reference, we've been talking about this R2-D2 Lego that we are giving away, and we have more reviews. We have to thank the crowd that has been adding more reviews on Apple Podcasts. I think we've had like 5 or 6 entries now, so... Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think of the show and do that before Andor ends for your chance to win an R2-D2 shipped to you at no cost to you. It is the larger scale R2-D2 Lego set, over $200 in value. You leave us that review and there's 5 people right now who have a great shot at this. I don't know that we have anybody who's already set up, but got to remind everyone to go after that R2-D2 before we start talking about this episode.
And I think it's probably worth mentioning as well that if you did leave a review, you have to listen to the episode where we call your name because there's no way to contact you.
Maybe you'll have to email us on our podcast.
But
if
there
you don't
go.
Get into us, then we're going to just pick a name out of the phone book and send it to them.
Chris, we thought through this a bit. We figured that those who are listening to us are going to leave us a review and continue to listen to the show. That's a reasonable expectation.
You know what that might? That's a great expectation.
I don't know. I review movies I've never seen all the time.
Wait, is that why you have so many quotes in movie ads these days?
Yeah. All the time, yeah.
All right, well, before we talk about episode 9 of Andor, we're going to get into that quickly. Really just want to go around the group here and think about 200 episodes. What's it mean to do 200 episodes of this podcast? I'm going to start with Chris. Chris, well, tell us what you think about
this. For me, it means 100 more than doing 100. and...
Thank you.
I wish I knew half of you as well as I knew most of you. I think I can't be sincere. No, it's a wonderful thing. I never thought we'd have. It's been an honor and a privilege to speak with you throughout the last few years, up to 200 episodes. I'm thankful for you guys, and I'm thankful for we do have fans. There are people listening, and I'm very thankful for them. And it's motivating, and it's a great thing that we are able to do this, even on this level. And you know what? I don't even want to go to Star Wars Celebration because we have Star Wars Celebration every week on this pod.
Oh, there it is. Chris, chills. You gave me chills on that
there
one.
There you go.
Tip of the hat, another Lothcat hat tip for you. I'll jump in.
Can I just ask, Jonathan, can we bring the house lights up for a second? I knew it. Not a dry eye in the house. And again, thank you everyone for being so quiet for the audio, but it's so great to see all your faces.
They're really going to have a tough time when Harrison Ford walks out to not be a little bit louder. I think we're going to have trouble with that.
It's going to be hard.
We promised a big guest star on this episode, didn't we, Chris?
Yeah, he'll be here.
Just so that I feel like I usually set these up and then I leave it to me to have the last word. So I'm going to jump in now and just say it has been the same honor and privilege that Chris has said. I also think that looking back and having all of these episodes to go back to as we reminisce about our time on this podcast and think about Star Wars and, you know, our Last Jedi podcast, we've talked about a lot, our instant reaction, having our thoughts on these shows before they become in movies, before they become like just an indelible part of Star Wars in our memory is so much fun to go back to. And I love having that archive. And I hope that people who are just finding this podcast are going to go back and listen to some of those episodes. We've done everything from breakdowns of the leaked script of episode 9 to each individual Star Wars movie. We've done an episode on each of those. And of course, gone along for each series. But then we also reacted to movies as they came out in the theater. And I believe we started with The Last Jedi. That was our first one that we reacted to as just after seeing it. And then we did the same for Solo, as well as The Rise of Skywalker. And then, of course, everything we've done for the series. So having what is an audio tome of all of our thoughts and reactions to Star Wars, I think, is something I'm going to cherish for a very, very long time. And talking with all of you about it is another thing I cherish. So that's my thoughts.
Well said,
Mike. Who should go next?
Let's give it to Ryan.
Well, you guys started this podcast, and then I came, you know, it's been a big part of my life. We started, and I was in my late 20s. I'm now in my mid-40s, and, you know, that's a long time. And no, I mean, it's been wonderful. Listen, we're glad to have listeners, of course, but even if we didn't, which we may not, as life gets crazier, it's a little less than this, but it's an excuse to have a phone call with three of my best friends every week to talk about something we all love. So, you know, that's been a huge additive to my life. And you know, our small but dedicated listenership has been wonderful to us, leaving us the reviews on iTunes and stuff like that, letting us know that they're enjoying it. And you know what? Even the people who left the review saying that, Don't believe us. We don't like Star Wars. I mean, they're fine too. So, you know, it's been a blast. I always look forward to it. It's, you know, embarrassingly enough, Mike, I also listen back sometimes, and I was listening to our Rise of Skywalker reaction the other day, and it's a blast to have these kind of documents of not just a fandom, but a friendships. And it's just we've had a lot of fun, we've really had a bunch of laughs, you know what I mean, and I'll miss all of you.
after this episode. Wait a second. Oh, no.
And I like less than half of you, half as well as you deserve.
Ryan, I wonder, do the memories flow back to you when you listen to something like The Rise of Skywalker and you're like, I remember standing in that hallway as we had people staring.
I remember exactly
like, what are those guys doing?
Yeah. Standing in front of that furniture store in City Point in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I mean, these are memories we'd have without the podcast, but the podcast gave us an excuse to we went to see Solo and we're sitting in a mall in Hobo or in Jersey City while Mike's wife was what, 11 months pregnant or something.
Yep.
these are milestones in life that go along with Star Wars.
And I prioritized being at Solo rather than being by her side.
Right.
You know, and we crossed the river for you because none of us had anything going on.
We literally, we fjorded the river.
Sam recorded an episode holding his newborn baby once.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, give us your thoughts before we move into talking about Andor.
Thank you, Mike.
I fell asleep.
Well, we certainly keep recording them.
Bringing
no, I'm kidding. I'm having a great time, guys. I'm back. Some listeners, they might be thinking to themselves. First of all, they might be going, "Wait, who's this voice? I don't recognize this voice." And
old Sam.
And they might think that means, well, wait, Sam hasn't been on 200 episodes, but I've been here every episode. I just don't always talk. Some episodes, I hang back. You know, sometimes it's the notes you don't play for the whole episode. I don't really have anything to add that anybody hasn't said. For me, more than the document, more than the show, more than putting it out there. It's the regular calls with you guys. It's the pre-show and post-show and all the conversations during the show. It's a good escape during the week. It's a chance to just talk about something that is, you know, ultimately utterly inconsequential, and how refreshing that is to be able to talk about just something that's made purely for fun and fantasy and entertainment, right? I've really valued that. I valued being invited to join the conversation. And it is wild to think that despite spending 30 odd years talking about Star Wars, or 20 odd years, I guess, since I discovered Star Wars, talking about it and then joining a podcast and doing 200 episodes, there's still stuff to talk about. So I appreciate you guys, and I appreciate the recording, and I appreciate everybody who does listen. It's really wonderful whenever we get an email. We have a text thread, and every review that comes in, every email we get, every review that comes in and every email that we read, we share and we talk about, and it's lovely. If we haven't referenced your email yet, there's only four of us. We can't always get in that inbox.
Also, if you want in on this text thread, just send an email with your phone number. You can be in there, too.
Oh, boy, Ryan.
Oh, we got to start a Droids Pod Discord. That's the next step.
We should.
Droids Pod.
You know what? There's other Star Wars podcasts who have done it. We can do it ourselves. In all seriousness, though, we do thank everybody who has listened. There are those of you who've listened for a long time. Gabe comes to mind. David, Sean, the infamous Sean. Among many others who've listened for a very long time. And that flower shop's got to be crushing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, big yeah. He's killing it.
I can't wait
till we start getting reviews and emails about how I said Star Wars was inconsequential. I'm really... Guys, I think you know
you
what I meant.
You also took credit for having discovered Star Wars.
Wait.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Ryan, when did Jon Favreau get on this podcast?
We're going to do it. Part of this podcast.
We do I hope people know that we do the podcast. It's all practical. It's all practical recording. This
Actually,
is real to real.
The
real mics.
I have a VR headset, and in front of me is a Mac and a microphone.
It's real microphones, real mics, real mic.
Real mic.
Real mics, real mic. By the way, I think that we had a new review from someone who's only listened to one of the most recent episodes. And to the only clone, this is probably the first new episode since you left a review. Thank you for still listening this long. Please, we've got more to say. We promise. Hang in there. And thank you to everybody. 200 episodes. Wow. I'm really floored that we've been able to do this for so long. And I think I've said floored a lot. And speaking of floored, as one of our reviewers said, I have talked about the floor in Arcana 5 a bit as we talk about episode 9. Wow. Nobody's listening of Andor.
Wow.
This, look, they continue to construct so much for this series that has been beautifully thought through in new ways to conceive of science fiction storytelling, which has been such a treat for all of us. But this episode starts, and I just want to get right into it, with devising a new method of torture that we feel like we've seen this kind of torturous moment before. They need information. They're going to torture them. They know they're going to give the information. There's the tete-a-tete back and forth with the torturer and the torturee, but yet they added something new, and they found a way to make it unique with the idea.
That was wild.
I mean, torturing, and then never playing that sound, never, because our imagination is always going to do better
never
than what
play
they could actually
tape,
play.
Destroy this tape and never listen to it.
Right.
And Werner was in this episode?
Werner was
in. Yeah, he could have been, yeah.
Not ever listen.
It's not out of the realm of possibility.
And of course, our thoughts and prayers to the Grizzly Man.
Oh, yeah.
But so, we have this scene.
Mike, I gotta go back for it.
I gotta go.
We gotta pay tribute to Mike's 200 episodes. He had the perfect segue.
Well, I've been
times. Well, let's trample all over it then. Mike, let me stop you. That segue was perfect.
We're really firing on all cylinders when we get to 200.
This is a Patreon
episode. I can't imagine what we're going to do when we get to 400. We're really going
to
have
to be a clean. You know what? Tell the podcasts out there that are saying, like, what, you know, I want some advice. And I'm sure there are a lot of podcasts here tonight that are listening, that are here.
Jonathan, let's get the lights up for this.
Can we turn it up? I want to see everybody's face. Please
it's also
keep it
not
down.
A dry eye because we're doing water effects, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's worth mentioning. Everyone's wearing a poncho as well. So,
well, Gallagher died this week.
No.
Oh boy.
Oh my gosh.
He was by all accounts a terrible man. Anyway, so the anyone doing a podcast that wants to know how do you get to 200 episodes? Whenever you think about stopping doing the podcast, just don't.
That's it.
And you'll get there.
That's the key.
Just don't stop. Even if
every
you go,
time,
guys,
every
we
time
have no energy or things to talk about. Just keep going.
Every time one of the four of you says, guys, should we back this up? Just the other three just don't respond on the thread. And then you're going to hit 200 in no time.
The floor.
So back to the floor and the torture and what we have from our favorite Imperial officer, Dedra. I the reason I want to give so much credit to this is just I am always a fan of, you know, trying something new, giving us something new. And the idea of so much of the fear and the tension of this is built up in the dialogue and built up in the description of Dr. Gorsh and what Dedra wants Dr. Gorsh to do to Bix. And there's that build up to it where it's all written so well, it's performed exceptionally well. And then the choices that are made in the sound design, in the edit, in the close-up of Bix's face, I think is expertly crafted and, you know, really executed at such a high level that it makes you, again, go deep into your imagination of what this torture is for her. Mm-hmm. And it feels absolutely terrifying. And I'm in awe that that was in an episode of Star Wars.
Is this the mind thing? Is this somehow related to the Bor Gullet?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think it is, but it's a good point because Bor Gullet knows the truth.
Yeah.
I was thinking this. It reminded me of the. Yeah, well, I'm going to say it differently.
It's kind of.
Gullet.
Are they trying to kind of like parallel that both sides use this kind of awful thing?
I think it's just that. I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just that both are imaginative and they're taking advantage of the genre.
Yeah.
Which is that if you're going to come up with like a torture, a means of torture of a character, like, and not that like, you know, I'm not a big torture head over here, but like. If you're going to come up with the means of torture for a character and you're in a sci-fi fantasy world, why not make it something that doesn't exist in real life?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, like it's just like, It just seems like not a no-brainer, because it's like it was like such a cool thing. Like, I was like, I never would have thought of that. That's so cool. But like, it also was like, wow, like, how interesting. Thanks for using the genre to like make something that's new and interesting.
I also,
the show is doing in spades, which is so interesting because the show feels more quote unquote grounded, but only because it's well written.
Yeah.
right. Yeah. It's doing something it's super fantastical. Like,
because it just feels more grounded because the people behave like people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause in no way does Saw Gerrera behave like a person in Rogue One at all.
No, but it's like you understand that like he's you understand why he is like what he is.
Yeah.
So it's just like it can be like heightened and stylized, but it's like it's still like is rooted in something that's like, yeah, like the rules of this make sense. The way people react emotionally to the things like has a logic to it.
This was just such a Dedra Miro episode, for me. And I loved it. Like, that was the even more so than the, you know, the prison and, you know, prison portion and plotting escape and everything. Like, her, what she's doing and what they're doing with her character and that actress is so, like, it's across, you know, every episode so far she's become increasingly interesting. But it's like when you start this, you know, just that whole sequence, the torture sequence, you know, it opens with you know, what is like this kind of classic good cop, bad cop, like ruse where, you know, first she orders the men not to clear out Bix's friend. I forget his name right now.
Pack.
And say again.
His name's Pack.
Pack. Right. She's, you know, they're like, do you want us to get rid of him? And she says, no, no. And then as soon as Bix is brought in, she says, my God, what are you doing? Get him out of here. You know, and it sets it up initially. You know, I think, oh, this is such a great ploy because she's going to use this to, you know, sort of establish herself as like, I'm not like them. That was a clumsy mistake. We obviously don't want you to see that. I'm here, your friend, whatever, whatever. But like, then it's revealed over the course of the interrogation that, you know, not only is she's not using the torture device for intimidation or to try and coerce any kind of confession. She wants to torture her. And she's not going to believe anything she says. And so that whole ruse at the beginning even becomes like, well, who was that for? You're just malicious. She's so pure evil and so driven just by like desire for power. It's just like every time her superior officer commends her and she like has just like her mouth twitches in like the briefest like grin. It's so delicious. She's such a good actor and such a nuanced performance. Dedra Miro, I'm here for it.
Denise Goff, which I haven't seen anything else she's been in. I really should actually look up more of her IMDb to see what she's been in, but I couldn't agree with you more, Sam. She is spectacular. So much of this cast is spectacular. But I'm curious what you all think about the choice that was made in this series to be like, oh, we're going to see her as sort of an underdog within the Empire. We're going to kind of relate to her a little bit. We're going to want her to be successful. We want her to take down Bliv. And even though we know in an abstract that she's doing terrible things and that she's part of the terrible fascism of the Empire, until this scene, until this moment, and Sam, you mentioned it, like, she's there. She wants to torture her. She doesn't have any other real motive because there's nothing going to be beneficial to this other than just going to torture her and assert her dominance and show her pure evil. Which, what a way for us all to shift and be like, oh, wait, hang on. Now I have to think about how I related to her. I wanted to root for her. And now I have to consider, oh, there is this more mundane aspect to the everyday of people who happen to be so evil, which I believe has always been kind of a conversation about around those in the Nazi regime in World War II, is that there are so many people who would have seemed just like any other who happened to do these terrible, terrible things.
I gotta be honest, I don't think I was rooting for her.
No, I think that what I was just gonna say is like, I think that because
I look like a
wait, no,
never, wait a
everybody
second,
hold take this back,
booze, Mike. Please. You know, the Empire is don't want them to capture Andor, right?
Chris, the Empire is asserting their actual control, and that's what I respect. As someone who wants to see less big government and more emperors.
Oh, no.
No, sorry. But fine. No one's rooting for. But you know what I mean. Like we're meant to try to connect to her.
You like her better than Blevin, right? Yeah. Like yes. Blevin is. He's the worst type of Imperial officer. And, you know, he's empowered and he's, you know, an egotist, you know, and it's the kind of person that insofar as those first couple episodes present the ISB as a, you know, as a workplace, you're like, oh, I hate that guy at the workplace, you know? And so in that sense, I know what you mean, Mike, that you're like, you're on her side. It positions you where she is the underdog within the ISB. But
well, she's also the one woman. She's the only woman in the
But
ISB.
I never, you know, I think like to Ryan's point, it's like I never was fully on her side because the show never denies the fact that she is an Imperial, you know, spy and an Imperial officer and a superintendent with the ISB. So it's like, yeah, they're all bad. And so it's just degrees of bad. And then you're realizing that it's like, almost to the senator's line, Mon Mothma's line of, you know, I show them the what is the thing she shows them so that they miss the knife at their throat, right? Like Dedra was kind of the knife
like
at the throat.
She makes herself a nuisance so that they can see what she's
well,
really
but there's like a specific, like I show them the something in my hand so they miss the knife at their throat. And it's like Blevin was like the something in the hand, right? And Dedra's kind of been the knife at our throats where now we're like, oh, she's worse than that guy. That guy was a bureaucrat and she's like so ambitious, you know, that she doesn't care what a body count she racks up.
Right.
You know, look, guys, just call me Cyril Karn. and I'm here because she's taught me once again to live. And I didn't know that there was anything left living for until I met.
You know what I think the show is so successful at is that, and I would have said this episodes ago if I was on, but, you know, it's a 12-episode series. So far, it's like really held its episode count, which cannot be said for a lot of the recent Star Wars shows.
Oh, my God. No.
You know, Obi-Wan was like a 2-episode series crammed into 6 episodes. But this show understands that, like, if you're going to do a 12-episode series, there needs to be movements in it. Like, there are different arcs throughout. Like, it's like, you know, we've had the prison arc and, like, the heist arc and, like, things like that. Then it feels like we've actually, like, gone through, like, multiple kind of, like, literally movements of story.
For sure,
guys,
yeah.
You know who, you know, this is wild. You know who Denise Goff is? Or, like, what a lot of people would know her from without knowing her from it? She's the voice of Yennefer in the Witcher 3 video game.
Oh, cool. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a huge job.
Wow.
That's, like, that's leap obviously unseen, right?
That's
but
great.
I bet there's a lot of crossover fans to, you know, to that.
Interesting. Well, why don't we just keep on talking real quickly just about Dedra in this episode, because we can jump forward, just focus on her and the reference to her scene with Cyril, where he comes to basically once again accost her, tell her that he wants to do everything he can to bring justice to Andor, make sure that he's trying to once again rise in the ranks. I just wanted to see what you thought about that scene, because it was him really positioning himself to want to continue to fight this battle and search and give her anything she needs. But then also, you know, he's probably in love with her as well.
It's kind of a wild scene. Yeah. It's to me, it was almost like she, from the outside, she's probably like, oh, this guy is crazy. But then she realizes that she actually relates more to him than she realizes. And I think she's like, under the guise of her being this officer in this newfound empire, I think it's like, well, geez, I'm important in this. And then the fact that she sees herself in this person that's not part of this, who like failed, I think it's like terrifying her internally. That I think it's like looking into a mirror for her. And she's like,
that scene was the moment in the whole episode that I found like that was a legit surprise. I like did not see that coming from him, right? Like he obviously he's been unraveling, but like it's like the way he accosts her and you know,
he knows, you know, she's been there before. Yeah, like he followed. Like it's not the first time he's stopped
expected
her.
It's farther than I expected it to go. And what I love is like it is just shaping him up to be like truly like the most dangerous thing like on like our planet. Just a rejected, impotent, poor, lonely white guy. You know, it's like, oh, that's who causes the worst problems. So,
but what you're saying is that you're predicting where it's going to go, Sam, right? Sorry, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, he's kind of the uncased wire version of that, the same version of Dedra, right? He's like,
sure.
He's got no casing. He has no like control. And so now it's like, well, this guy is potentially dangerous to not only Andor, but to everyone.
Well, that's a good analogy, Chris, because it's not just that he has no casing. It's that his casing's been stripped from him, right?
Right.
Like literally. So it's like he's a stripped wire.
Yes,
know?
Exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm still very Ryan. Any thoughts for you on like where they're going with all of this Cyril? Well, like we've watched a lot of Cyril, watched a lot of conversation with his mom. We see him doing everything he can to regain some semblance of power over anyone, and we don't know what it's really going to come to. And I think kind of what you were just talking about, there's these different arcs, right? In this way, this is built out over 12 episodes. We have 2 episodes left because we have already seen 10, even though those of you listening to this, we're talking about 9. Cyril could end up being one of the focal points of one of those episodes and seeing where his story actually goes and what he means to all of this.
Well, it's been interesting because he was kind of established. Like at first, it seemed like he was going to be like the big bad,
right?
Yeah,
the first few episodes, and so he's been kind of relegated to this like B plot that's like a thread throughout. So I'm very interested. I trust the show enough to think that to be confident that they're going to conclude it and not just like drop him off, you know. But it has. I imagine in the next 2 episodes, they need something big needs to happen with him. Because they have kind of just been like keeping him on the back burner so much, just kind of sitting with his mom as she kind of berates him.
What amazing, like just those. I mean, who, where would you ever get not only just those scenes, but like that many of that much time and development? It's like, it's again, a testament to how this series kind of understands what serialized television is and could be like,
well,
just sitting with them.
Yeah.
It's so oppressive. The cast is phenomenal.
It reminds me a little bit, and this is might be a funny or a stretch, but it reminds me of the squirrel that chases the nut in Ice Age, where it's like kind of a background thing, but then it like it results in like a glacier being moved. like it's this, he's constantly chasing this thing and constantly getting shoved aside, and then it's gonna come to fruition and affect everyone once he finally gets what he needs or wants. And also, is he named after cereal because he eats it a lot?
Must be.
That was my serious thought.
I'm fascinated. Yeah. I'm fascinated just, I don't know what could warrant all of this time with him. Like, again, we'll find out, but just whether or not he's really worthy of this much attention. And I, like you said, Ryan, we trust the creators of the show. We trust the writers. There's a purpose to it. Is he going to take it upon himself once he hears that Andor has been part of this prison escape? Is he going to take it upon himself to go and find it so that then he can again have a chance to bring himself back to some sort of glory or power? I'm very excited to see what happens with it because I think it'll also take every bit of those scenes that we've already seen and recontextualize them. Like this is a rewarding show and it's first watch always, but there's been so many things already going back and watching episodes that are again rewarding once more. I just recently watched episode 3 again, where Luthen talks about knowing Andor's story. And it's like, your father was hung right down the middle of that road right there, right? And then what, episode 6 or 7 is when we see the flashback to when his father was hung and why they avoid that spot. I just little details that they continually have thought through and gone through and made purposeful by potentially being like, oh, this is how the story resolves, or this is where the story goes. So let's fill that in a little bit. Given that we've written this and not written it to the point of it just needed to get into production, they clearly spent enough time and Tony Gilroy wrote this long enough to be like, oh no, we can go change this thing in episode 3 that's going to matter in episode 7. I love that.
I'm very curious what the writing process was, like how long they took writing it.
Yeah.
It feels very planned out, obviously.
Yeah, I would love to know that as well. I mean, we'll get some kind of, they've they seem to bake in the sort of documenting, you know, documentary and documentation of, yeah. of the creation into everything they make these days. So we'll get something. But Mike, when you're talking about recontextualization, there's another reveal in this episode that for me was like, you know, I'm loving every beat we get of Mon Mothma's storyline and her, you know, with her husband and her daughter and everything. But we learn who Vel's family is, her wealthy family that she's fleeing, which was hinted at in the previous episode. And for me, like not just the, you know, the satisfaction of like, ooh, a nice surprise, a twist, you know, something I didn't see coming, right? But then specifically it recontextualizes like the hesitation that she had, you know, before kicking off the mission, the heist mission. Yeah. There's so much more weight to it. It's not just about, you know, if I do this, there's no turning back to, you know, not being a rebel. It's not just about the lives of her crew, but it's everything. It's who her family is. It's how this can be traced back. It's what happens if this goes wrong. And, you know, you think of it, it's suddenly that pause she takes, the reason she can't call go on the mission, you know, is now suddenly, well, now I know why they took so long to establish that.
I hadn't thought about that. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, I love that. And
yes, it adds to it.
Yeah. And why don't we just get into this whole scene between Mon Mothma and Vel, and you know, really you see Vel speaking about going back to another episode. She's parroting what Cinta said to her about the struggle never ends. There's never a moment to rest. She's like giving that right back to Mon Mothma in this episode, where she's, you know, taking the person that she works with but also loves and taking that as dogma now. And so it's really interesting to see that kind of play back and forth, where they're trying to hide in whispers. There's a lot of secret conversations in a very open Coruscant apartment. I think we've called that out before. You know, they're trying to keep things hush-hush, but really speaking in a very open spaces.
Yeah. Maybe sound travels different there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a little bit more of a hint of the backstory of who Vel is, but also more of the traditions of that, of their planet, which is, I don't think I can ever pronounce it correctly. Do any of you know, what is it, Chandralin? Is that the name of the planet that they're all in from? That Mon Mothma is?
I think Chandralin is like a descriptor of like the people of there. Is it Chandrila or is it?
It's Chandrilan. Chandralin? Chandralin.
Oh, Chandralin. Okay. Yeah.
Chandralin Olgar.
It sounds like, I think when they say it, it sounds like Shangri-La. So that's, I think it's like Chandralin.
Yeah, that's kind of what, kind of where my mind was going to, where it's supposed to be. It's kind of like utopic vision.
Yeah. Well, we get a little bit more of the conversation about
the planet is Chandrila.
Chandrila.
With just without an N. And the N is like people of Chandrila or Chandrilan. Yeah.
But there's almost more in these two scenes about Chandralin tradition, because
right.
Vel is getting the pressure from Mon Mothma's husband, so who's left at your age, who are you viable for, what's, you know, she's, because she's old, and that she's like, oh, this isn't her priority, this isn't what matters to her, and she won't reveal to the rest of the family what she's doing. She'll only say that to Mon Mothma. But it is once again a little bit of a preview of what we're going to see in the episodes to come, because this tradition and this family tradition and learning more about Mon Mothma and when she was married at the age that she was married and the duty that she has to go through. And then also trying to hide everything. If you're Vel, go and be the spoiled rich girl. Stop, you know, skulking around doing things for the rebellion. You know, keep up your appearances. Keep up your disguise. Act a little bit more like Mon Mothma is. And we've seen so much throughout this series, the different ways that people are approaching rebellion. And the different ways that Luthen's trying to bring it all together while everyone has a different idea of what they can do and what they are willing to risk. So just despite this being, what, only two scenes, very effective and once again, pretty emotional, just to get a little bit more of what Mon Mothma has someone else to confide in. And that in those episodes, if we were to go back to them, to think about Vel totally differently now as the rich girl that she is, who's gone to be a part of the rebellion, rather than someone who's just, we met on Aldani as a, you know, part of the
It's just really good
group.
World building too, in the sense that it helps this kind of gray span that we're in, where it's like, oh, the world wasn't perfect before the Empire took over either. Like, mm-hmm. there's always been problems and problematic things. And I think that kind of detail really kind of helps illustrate that. Where it wasn't just a transition, like, all of a sudden overnight, everything was bad. But I think these kind of world building details really help illustrate that, like, this is how this stuff builds up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that you see kind of how three people of a similar... Well, from the same, you know, from the same planet and of similar means and backgrounds, you know, the way the transition out of, you know, the Republic, the days of the Republic, you know,
right.
into where we are now, like that, it shows kind of three paths. There's there's the joiner, there's the quiet resistor, and there's the frontline fighter, all
right.
coming from the same beginnings, you know?
Yep.
And it also, you know, I mean, just also in the scene, it was like, I mean, just the lovely, like, interactions between Mon Mothma and Vel. And you see that, like, what feels like a real sisterly relationship. And then the moment when Vel actually reflects back what her, I don't know, presumed lover said to her about, like, we only get what's left, you know,
right.
It's like, just, you know, again, it adds to that moment. It's, they're really good at, they're not quite, I guess they're callbacks, but, like, they're elegant callbacks. They're not clumsy, clunky, like.
And also just being, yeah. like, the cool aunt that shows up.
Yeah. Yeah, she seems like she'd be a dope aunt.
Yeah. Here, have this.
Even
awesome
though that
dress.
Kid does not yeah. deserve a dope aunt.
Yeah.
From the way that's going.
Yeah.
A lot of credit to Genevieve O'Reilly, what she's doing with character in general. And we can talk more about this when we talk about episode 10. But I'm starting to just believe wholeheartedly, like, the amount of acting Emmy nominations, I hope, is, like, endless. I hope that there's one for Genevieve O'Reilly. I hope Stellan Skarsgård. I hope Diogo Luna. I hope we'll got to get into it with Andy Serkis. There's got to be so many different awards coming those shows' way, and awards don't matter that much. I just want people in recognition for it, but we can talk about that later. We've gone now and gone into this episode in depth, and we haven't talked about the heart of the matter of Nobody's Listening and the entire aspect of what's going on in Arkina 5 and the building, you know, rebellion that they're going to have within their prison station.
Just
so
haunting.
Yeah, let's get into this. You know, a lot of this episode during their time is really scoping things out, learning more about what Cassian has started to develop with other people who are on his floor, on his level, and they're starting to think about their ways that they can try to act against the Empire and act against their captors. And we see him being skulking in the background, doing some things in the bathroom. What he's doing in the bathroom, we have no idea what that could mean. We'll learn about that later. But they're kind of talking through it all, and
you okay in there?
Look, we've all had those moments.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to hide things. Yeah, oh, there's my stomach's not working out that well.
Yeah, but my tubes.
The heart of this episode is the heart of this episode for their time in the prison is what we kind of see during the off hours between Cassian and Kino Loy and their conversations. And really, I think it's a fascinating thing to be. They've talked a lot in this show about the arrogance of the Empire, about their and they did this with what in Aldani, the third episode where it actually was the eye, and it's Nemec who's talking to Cassian. He's like, "What do you think they'll think?" And Cassian's like, "They don't think of you at all. They don't have any Ooh. Thought for you, any time for you.
Thanos.
This is They don't care. That's really the heart of this here is that they're in this prison among thousands and thousands of other prison workers, and they think that what they've built, and granted, we all feel like this is an impenetrable prison, that what they've built cannot be taken down, so they don't need to listen into the actual inmates. And that makes, Cassian makes that very clear by constantly saying, nobody's listening, nobody's listening, what do you worry about? And they go through all this while also talking about the changes in their shifts and trying to come to some sort of conclusion where some of the inmates have realized they're never going anywhere, and Kino is still on program. He's still in mind of what his state is, and he's not going to give that up unless something drastic happens, which it does.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to me to see, because we're talking about just kind of the bureaucracy scenes with the Empire and the fact that the irony is that they already have Andor. And like the underwriting thing is that he's already been captured and they're doing all this work to find him. But Andor's like, I am way too close. I literally have to get out of here because as soon as they figure this out, I'm gone no matter what. So like his end game is to get out of there at any means possible and to save as many people, I feel, as possible. Like he already understands there's very like a sliver of hope. And so he has to jump on it. And I think it's cool to see him kind of become that leader for a change, as opposed to the other scenes we see him where he's kind of just acting out of, I want money to get away kind of thing to a certain degree, or to like better his family's situation. So we're starting to see his like leadership come to fruition here.
This episode also just like so successfully, it's such a specific thing to pull off of this growing sense of dread, but this idea that like something big is happening. We don't know like what it is. And like the world building of like how they communicate with hand signals through the tubes and stuff like that is so great. And then, but also like really has this sense of like something's going on and it's like very significant. The way that like, I mean, this is a weird thing to bring up, but like when there's like, you know, like if something big happens on the news and you're at work and people are like, have you like heard about this? And you like haven't checked your phone yet or like something like that. And you're like, it could be kind of anything and you don't know if it's going to be like a huge deal or like, it's just like this very specific feeling that it evokes really well.
Yeah.
Now, maybe you guys can help me with like the specifics of this. Cause I was a little, and maybe the audience can help as well. The
lights up.
So my understanding is that they release someone back into a different floor.
Yeah.
So everybody realized that like the sentences are bogus and like they're never getting out, right?
Yep.
The specifics that I'm struggling with is that was that the first person to like ever be released?
Oh.
This is what was confused. Ryan, I'm with you cuz like I was like if they're here's where I landed cuz I've thought about this. If they were doing this before, how did nobody cotton on to it before now, right? And I think that there might be something to the fact that it's like, I think they maybe release the person into the same prison rather than like maybe they transfer them between prison facilities.
That's
or
what
something.
I was thinking. Yeah, like they bring them to a different one.
But wouldn't they
one.
Say I also, like I was just I, at a different prison facility? That's
right,
where I was
right.
like, getting confused.
Oh yeah.
I also felt like the. Like, there's a logic leap that the prisoners make and the show backs up, but I'm with you, Ryan, that it's a logic leap, which is that like, because they also phrase it as like, they made a mistake. They made a mistake and they released a guy from four and they put him back on two.
Right.
And to me, that sounds like, oh, they made a clerical error and a guy who was supposed to get released didn't get released. But what they actually mean is like, The Empire is never going to release any of them.
Yeah,
and they made a mistake with
people.
They made a mistake with the cup game of where they moved him, and I'm like, that wasn't super clear. So I like the concept, I just
there were specifics that were confusing, and like not that it really matters, but
no, like, they need to be like they need to be like, oh, they wipe people's memories. But that's also
them,
like a big ask,
right?
Right,
they give them that torture worm thing that they just gave, you know, like they need to do something like that.
My takeaway was that this was the first time they had done it because of the change in the whatever the act was, and that the clampdown of the Empire has been, well, no, we can't spare a man, get them back in there. We'll try this, and that was a mistake because it was very easily they all figured it out. So, which, you know, seems like a very dumb mistake to make because the person's going to talk. They're not going to come in and be like, oh, hi, I've never been here before. You
know, right.
Mike, I like that read. That read works for me.
That was my takeaway, but I can see it. That's why it's like some of this again makes me want to watch it again because I'm like, I don't know that I always catch it the first time. And so.
Yeah, it's very possible that there was a very clear explanation that I missed.
It's dense, yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
Well, it's also, we kind of had some of the the buffoonery of the guards when he was being like in ingested into the system where they were like, are you watching? Like they didn't seem to have their act quite together where he's like, are you standing there? He's like, yeah. You know what I mean? So I feel like that could kind of play into it too, where it's like, there's some oversight happening that the guards are not really accounting for.
Mm. Yeah. Then we continue in this episode into Olaf and the struggles that he has. And, you know, that he's been struggling throughout the entire episode. They chose this actor who's been through a lot of different things that we've seen him in throughout the years. But Andor's doing everything he can to support him. They're all trying to support him on the table. He has that moment where he falters, but they're all trying to keep him up. And that's where we get to that he's had a stroke, which there's these things now in Star Wars or in Andor where I think they're making these choices to be like, oh, this is a thing that happens to humans no matter what. Mm-hmm. So it's okay that we've never had a stroke before in Star Wars because it still fits in and then can make you feel the same kind of empathy for him because he's dealing with this. But then as he's on program, you know, he falls down, they keep him up. Eventually they have to call for the doctor. And that doctor basically says there's nothing worth saving here. And in that moment, we kind of get the whole conversation. We've been getting a lot of this buildup is Cassian's continuing to ask, you know, how many guards on the floor? How many guards on the floor? And it's this that Kino witnesses and experiences with the doctor having absolutely no, I guess, nothing that he can do. The doctor maybe has some actual concern, but there's just so little that he can do for Olaf.
I mean, I read that as he was the guy, as soon as you're sick, you're dead. Like, that's how I read that. Yeah. Like, there's nothing, even if he had a broken ankle, the guy was going to be done.
Well, but that's inefficient for the Empire, though. If they don't heal people to get them back to work, it's more about, like, when is someone too far gone that there's no healing they can even do?
It is, though, truly chilling that's, like, they don't even, like, I don't think, I mean, you know, I think there's a case that can be made that, you know, the darkest moment in any of Star Wars ever is, you know, Anakin killing younglings. And I think that's a very fair point. But I definitely think that, like, watching this where
it's like,
I mean, they euthanize an old man in a very like earthbound, realistic feeling way. You know, it's a painless injection, which is something that's like, I mean, that exists on planet Earth. And so like in that way, you know, it's like, there's not lightsabers.
Sam, it sounds like you speak from experience.
So
a lot of killing you've done these days.
Oh no. That's a lot. I'll have to cut that laugh. Put the lights down.
No, but I found it like this was maybe for me like the darkest and most sort of chilling the depiction of the Empire and its just utter disregard for the life of its citizenry is like, this was the low moment. And, you know, the casting of that actor, you know, he's a very sympathetic looking person. So that adds to it. You know, he evokes kind of, you know, he was working hard. He's like a grandpa and everything, but it also is just like, whoever this was, this like, this is horrible. The doctor just immediately goes to like, you know, we're not going to be able to fix him up. So I'm just going to euthanize him right here in front of you. And it's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's chilling. The whole circumstances also kind of like programmed you as a viewer to like just the kind of the threat of the floor, which is constantly looming. And then just this idea that if they don't follow the program, it's like they're also in trouble. So then anytime you see like them kind of go outside the path, like it's stressful to watch at all. And then you're just what are the bounds here where it's like, okay, well, they let Andor and Snoke see. I called him Snoke because that's he eventually will become Snoke. It was like basically
oh boy, fan theories.
You basically okay, well, they allow them that kind of level of, I guess you could call it some kind of empathy, but like they allow that, and that those like little details are interesting to me, but also super stressful. Like, just to, I don't want to know more about that prison system. I just want them to get out.
Well, also, like, I don't want to be, I think, Chris, maybe this is what you're getting at. It's like, I don't want to be Andor in that situation.
Yes.
I don't want to be the guy who's, like, not in his cell when he's supposed to be. Because, like, if something happens and somebody goes, why wasn't he in his cell? Yeah. I don't want to have to explain, like, well, I watched you put an old man.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm just like a milquetoast. Maybe I'm like a prison dream.
It's like what makes it more real, or like the fact that they're like, oh, they're allowed bathroom breaks. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It makes the whole situation feel real because it's like, okay, practically in that reality, yeah, they would let those two people carry that guy over because it just makes sense. like they're not denying that. Like, is that completely made up in the fact that like humans still have to move places and do things?
Yeah. Yep. And regarding the floor, there's also like that power outage that they experience when they're all wondering what's going on. We know what that is.
Wait, when was that? What point of the when did
so
that
when they're
in the episode?
When they're in the
oh,
when they're
that's,
all
that's
on
cool.
program
I didn't even
in
realize
the,
that.
So when yeah. they're all in their tubes, right, and like and they're signaling between different different rooms, different stations, and they're going, what's going on? Something's going on two, and everybody goes, you know, and Kino's saying, there's nothing on two. Remember the power
oh,
goes
yeah.
out?
Oh, wow. Great.
I think there was a big chilling. Power draw on two for that moment.
Wow, you're right.
Wow.
That's a great call, Sam.
Ooh. And then, you know, before we move on to the next episode, which will be a separate feed, but, you know, I think the crowd's ready. Thank you for keeping it down. This possibly the best last exchange of the series so far.
Oh,
super
absolutely.
Exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's the peppering throughout, like,
yeah,
because Cassian's keep peppering.
He asked that question so many times.
And Kino's face has never, ever shown that he would ever have any interest in doing that. But it's like, as he's asking, what do you mean, keep my men in line? And it's dawning on him that there's no one ever getting out of here, that no one has any chance. And then he says the line, never more than 12.
Never more than 12. Are we all ready? Never more than 12.
Cut to black. Cut to black. And you know yeah. exactly, it consistently the show, we know where it's going, but they get us there in incredibly exciting in different ways. But
yeah.
that's going to do it for our conversation on episode 9. Nobody's listening. You also can listen to episode 10, One Way Out, right after this. You can go find it. It's available now. That's episode 200. We've done 200, or as Ryan would say, we're out, right? That's it. It's like the last five chapters of Light of the Jedi. We're not doing it. It's over.
We'll do that at 300. 201 yeah. coming up next, though.
That's going to do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast.
Annie? 200?